Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
On Saturday, thousands gathered in Paris for the largest of many recent protests against police brutality. The unrest began when a 22-year-old black man, known only as Theo, was allegedly beaten and raped by police in a Parisian suburb on February 2nd. 4 days later, President François Hollande visited Theo in the hospital, hoping to calm the anger that has spread throughout France. But the gesture has done little to placate the masses there. Mélène Larson reports from Paris.
Protesters here are angry about what they see as the police systematically targeting black and Arab Parisians. What started off as a peaceful protest quickly descended into anarchy.
Things just kicked off. Kids are throwing bottles and stones at the police are answering with tear gas.
As protests rage on, Theo remains in hospital, recovering from the injuries he sustained after a stop and frisk that turned violent. We spoke to his childhood friend, Zakaria.
You just saw Theo at the hospital. How is he doing?
Comme vous le voyez, je viens de voir Theo à l'hôpital. Sa blessure, c'est qu'en gros, il a mal à la tête déjà. Il nous frappe à la tête. Il a une poche ici. En gros, ça lui permet de faire en gros ses besoins.
The alleged assault took place in Aulnay-sous-Bois, a poverty-stricken suburb of Paris with a large immigrant population. A video circling online has sparked international controversy. There are still conflicting claims as to the events that transpired. The allegation is that Theo was targeted by four officers who beat him, threw him to the ground, and thrust a baton into his anus, rupturing his intestines.
Il se faisait frapper, il était par terre, il criait, il essayait de se relever. Après, j'ai vu quand ils montaient dans la voiture, ils m'ont ramené, il était en sang presque partout de la bouche, et en gros, il était mal.
One officer has been charged with rape, and three others with unnecessary violence. They all denied the charges. Lawyers for the police officers have suggested that any injury inflicted was accidental.
Ça peut pas être un accident, parce que ça serait moi, j'aurais fait ça à quelqu'un d'autre, je serais déjà en prison, je crois. Sans, en gros, pas, j'aurais pas attendu tout ça, mais là, comme c'est des policiers, en gros, ils ont la justice avec eux. En gros, ils...
18-year-old Issa organized Saturday's Justice for Theo demonstration, which he had hoped would be peaceful.
On pense en fait que c'est la manière de brûler des voitures, c'est pas une bonne manière. C'est une manière, la manière pacifique, c'est la seule manière qui peut nous permettre d'être entendus. Et ceux qui brûlent des voitures, c'est des gens qui sont désespérés, qui en ont marre et qu'il faut aussi entendre. C'est une autre manière d'exprimer leur colère. Moi, je pense pas que ce soit la bonne, mais c'est des gens qui sont désespérés qu'il faut comprendre.
Have the police ever stopped and frisk you?
Oui, je me suis déjà fait contrôler, ça arrive souvent. Ils en profitent pour nous humilier, en fait, c'est devant tout le monde. Après, c'est plutôt ceux qui sont vus comme des Noirs ou des Arabes. Je pense que ça nous habitue dès notre jeune âge, vers 14-15 ans, ça nous habitue à être discriminés, à être considérés comme des citoyens inférieurs, on peut dire, avec des droits moins importants.
The timing of these protests couldn't be politically more sensitive. France elects its next president in April. far-right Front National's candidate, Marine Le Pen, has started a petition to support the police. And on Sunday, Le Pen and her closest advisor publicly referred to the protesters as scum.
Même un nombre certain de voyous cherchent chaque excuse possible pour déverser leur haine de la France, leur haine de l'état de droit, leur haine des forces de police. Les Français n'en peuvent plus.
Une partie d'entre eux ne nous respecte pas et en échange nous demande du respect. C'est un peu incohérent. Et c'est pour ça qu'il y a des tensions et qu'on sera entendu par la justice.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, February 19th, 2017, so I have been told. This is our global Sunday talk on racism, white supremacy. Every Sunday, it's once a month on the third Sunday of every month. We broadcast, this is earlier than our normal broadcast time, obviously. We try to speak with folks who are in different parts of the world, make sure that we keep an international perspective on the system of racism, white supremacy, what it is, how it works. We'll have our folks from different parts of the world on first, and then folks wherever you happen to be, stateside or wherever else, if you have questions, comments that you want to share, if you want to take this opportunity to be able to ask some non-white people in different parts of the globe, ask them some questions about how racism, white supremacy operates on their part of the planet, take advantage. We'll give out the number and folks will get an opportunity to share. I probably will have a few folks to continue to add as we go. We had some trouble adding some folks at the beginning of the program, so we'll continue to try to add them on as we are rolling. But the folks that we have with us already at the beginning of the program, I think she was with us just last month, towards the end of January, joining us from Belgium. We talked about some of her workplace racism experiences and her experiences as a black mother. Nancy, are you with us?
Yes, I am with you, with you all.
Outstanding. Good to hear from you again. I think we also, joining us from London, she's been with us a few times. Mary, are you with us?
Hi, yes, I am.
Right on. Also joining us from London, he has done outstanding work with the YouTube channel and getting up tons of our content so more people can access it via YouTube and sharing the program, investing, also joining us from the England area. Mr. Fox, you with us, sir?
That is slightly incorrect. I'm in the north of England, but I am here.
Right on. And joining us from Austria, he's been with us a few times before as well to share some of his views. Joining us live, African 1884. Are you with us, sir?
Yes, I am.
Outstanding. Good to hear from everybody. As I said, we'll probably have some other folks adding as we continue to roll along. I guess to get started, before we get to the audio clip, because I know a lot of people did hear about the situation in France, anything that you all wanted to say before we get started, observations or thoughts that have popped up since we last did our Global Sunday Talk, anything you all wanted to share before we get started? No observations, no thoughts, everybody good?
Just regarding the clip, from what I'm seeing, so from what I hear from the clip and what I'm seeing on the news as well, from what I've observed, this whole incident with the man in France, Theo, being allegedly raped by police officers in France, which is somehow an accident, it's the same thing. It is a global system, which we always fail to, well, many of us fail to understand that you can have black men in the US who have gone through the very same thing, and then, you know, thousands of miles away in France, which has always been labeled some type of, you know, hub of European culture, when you're going to have policemen accidentally raping black citizens. So it's, and from what I understand from hearing, did it say about three officers were charged with excessive force, and then one has actually been charged with the crime.
That's what I saw in the Washington Post article this week. The tragedy of Theo L. reveals France's failures on race, that three officers have been charged, but only one officer was charged with any sort of sexual violation.
Okay, so they've actually gone forward in... This happened no more than a week ago.
I will click the article to get the exact date. But yeah, I don't think it happened any more than within the last 7 to 10 days.
It was the 2nd of February. That's what I heard.
There we go.
2nd of February. They've acted pretty quick when you kind of think about it, compared to in the US, because this would have been lingering a lot longer. And then, you know, white supremacists will be, you know, battening down the hatches and thinking of how they can actually spin a couple of lies. But they've actually charged the officer. So I'm wondering what the officer doesn't look like, but they've actually decided to charge one of their own. Because I know you have a certain percentage of non-white people in the French police force. So for them to actually charge someone and then charge three others with a sexist force, that's it's very strange. It makes me think of what the actual person who actually done the main crime, what identity he is.
The Washington Post report. Oh, yeah, Mayor, I'm going to get you in. I just make sure everybody has the extra details. It says, without a mention of his race due to French privacy laws, they didn't mention, well, obviously the victim in this case is black, but they didn't divulge that immediately. However, television interviews with Theo L. and his parents quickly revealed he was black. The police officers involved have not been named, and no photos of them have appeared, although three have been charged with aggravated assault and one with aggravated rape. That's where it stands right now. Mary?
I was going to say, my observations on the whole thing is that, to me, it comes across as another form of buck breaking, modern day buck breaking. In America, they're doing the same type of thing where they're doing roadside orifice checks on men and women, black men and women over there. And this is just the furtherance of the buck breaking exercise that they do. And the fact that they've charged the officers, I think, maybe is to prevent any more uprisings. I don't think that they're going to do anything about it. So I think that they're adopting the American approach, which is to, well, sooner rather than later, charge a person and hope things die down and then find that nothing wrong has happened. Because the very fact that they say that they've investigated themselves and it's an accident is just so preposterous. But to me, when they use that type of language, it's like the fix is in. They've already decided. So I think I expect this to kind of go away after a while and then there's no resolution.
Yeah, put it this way, their lives are not ruined. Put it this way, they can still get employment.
Yes.
Wow. That Washington Post report and the audio that we heard at the beginning, that was from HBO's Vice from this week, where they were talking about that incident as well. But the Washington Post, I'm not reading the full article, just some of the interesting tidbits. With the French presidential campaign fully underway, politicians seemed remarkably restrained in response to protests at first. Prime Minister Bernard Cazeneau was conciliatory toward the protesters, saying that understandable emotions could not justify violence. Theo L. appealed for peace from his hospital bed, which is so reminiscent of Rodney King. In a gesture hard to imagine in the United States, President Francois Hollande visited Theo's bedside and praised his efforts to calm the waters, promising that justice will be done. Yet the internal police investigation resulted in a finding that Theo's injuries, which included a 2.5-inch tear in his anus, were not intentional. When violent protests continued, the presidential candidates finally weighed in. Francois Fillon, the right-of-center candidate, insisted that all the truth must come out, but condemned violence. Left-wing candidate Jean-Luc Mélenchon suggested that the violence was being encouraged without saying specifically by whom. Predictably, National Front candidate Marine Le Pen, who I think will be the next president, sided with police, condemning the permissive condemning the permissiveness of politicians who have governed us for years. One of her deputies in the far right party was more blunt, blaming the violence on rabble. Fillon, who is trying to draw voters from Le Pen, then one-upped his position by calling for treating as adults teens as young as 16 who are accused of attacking police. Fillon's former Justice Minister Christine Taubira, a native of French Guiana, was a high-profile presence but resigned last year in a disagreement with his government over anti-terrorism measures. Now, this was one. I am a victim of racism, but I know enough about Christine Taubira without having to do any Wikipedia. This is someone who has faced public racism for her political office for years. I just wrote that essay about how they depict black people as apes. She is another one. I could have included her in the article where she was talked about as a gorilla and an ape, and they had pictures of her. Matter of fact, I think it was that rag, Charlie Hebdo, after they got attacked and everybody was wigging out, they had a photo of her on the front page as a gorilla. And this just went on and on and on and on. Same thing that you see here every day with the Obamas. And they didn't put any of that information out. I know that. I am sure they should have staff at the Washington Post where they could have included that, because this whole article was about racism in France and how things have not improved and how they've dealt with this. In my opinion, that is an act of racism by omitting that information, that this is a French politician, a black female French politician who's faced tons of racism. Was that, Nancy, were you going to add?
Yes, I would like to add two things. So a few days after the incident, a new law has been, voted that protects more and more French policemen. So basically they have even more aptitude to kill everybody that they want to kill. It has been asked by the union of the police, union police. So I don't know what the name of that law is, but they can kill if somebody is resisting to any of the act that they want to do. Do you hear me correct?
Absolutely. That's very similar. They had, number one, in terms of legislation, they did similar things in the United States. I think Louisiana, they had the shooting in Baton Rouge this summer where they've made it, they've added all these penalties for resisting arrest. I think you can be charged with like a felony if they say you resisted arrest, and all of these extra charges and really, really long sentences if you are doing anything to resist arrest, or if you do anything to injure an enforcement official. And that was a lot of Donald Trump's campaign. You know, we need to back our same thing. Marine Le Pen said in the report, you know, we need to support our officers. We're tired of this, you know, bashing police officers as racist thugs.
Yes. So basically you have it. So, and the second thing that I want to mention, so what happened with Theo reminded me, the way that it happened, right? Because they say that it was a control of identity or something like that. That's how the whole incident started. But it reminded me of what happened in 2005, still in France, in what they call ghettos. Two young teenagers were trying to escape another police identity check, and they died because they went in a place where there were like tons of cables, and the place that they were in burned. And then it started again, like, why those police always come and check for our identity when they damn know, they do know who we are from the start. So it's like a game that I don't even know. Well, it's white supremacy, obviously, but I don't know what to say to those young, because they are living their life and police comes every day and it will be like 3 to 5 times a day asking, like, can I see your ID, please? And then, you know, it turns always bad.
Absolutely. They mentioned the incident that happened in 2005 that caused a lot of unrest in that Washington Post report. And I remember that, even though that was, you know, before the cows existed. And I was not paying attention closely to racism, white supremacy, but I do remember seeing that incident. And absolutely, it's very similar. And in fact, in the article, they mention how they have a stop and frisk program in France, which, you know, we talk about that all the time, that that is world nigger law, whether they say it explicitly or not. That's what the system of white supremacy is. You are under surveillance, and it's always, we need to stop and grope and fondle and rape and abuse you and see what you're up to and criminalize and everything else. That's going to happen wherever you happen to be in the world. South Africa, Brazil, France, US, Canada, anywhere in the world where you happen to be a black person, that's what you can look forward to.
Yeah. So I don't even know how to codify and to suggest what people can do about it, because it's just so bad.
Could I add something to that?
This is African 1884. Absolutely.
Yes. I mean, I'm going to have to take the position of Mwalimu Baruti, and that's an African-American scholar, and he says that we are at war, and that's one thing that we as black people need to take into consideration and wake up every day knowing that that is the reality we're facing, that we are at war wherever we find ourselves. And just to within the in regard to what's happening in France, this is a case that's been put out in the media. It's been documented. If you take Austria as an example, the many cases, but they're never usually put out in the media, or, you know, made international for everyone to hear and follow up. But the cases of Africans that are being mistreated in the prison system, and many of them end up dying, and a lot of these cases are not really documented. And I remember Gus saying that a lot of this stuff has been happening even in the US. Some of it is not documented and we don't get to hear it, but this stuff is happening like on a daily basis. I remember I was working as an asylum advisor here in Austria, and I would meet brothers who have been here for the last 3 years trying to seek asylum, and maybe they came here illegally, they end up going into prison, and while in the prison, the state has to take, white folks have to take samples of their blood to see how healthy they are. And I've seen cases of brothers who I met who end up telling me that they, when they came out of prisons, because they were put in deportation and the state could not get to deport them back to their African countries, and the state tells them that they're HIV positive. So they do a lot of things to black people, even here in Austria and here in France, and not in, even in Austria, I mean in the UK, but it's not very much documented. So what I want to say is that we are at war. Let's not forget that.
Great point. Dr. Rudy's been on the program 5 times, I think. I'm reminded one of his colleagues, I know they have self-referenced quite a bit, Dr. Kamal Kamban, who's also been on the program quite a few times, says that it is important, we, black people, we are not at war. White people are at war with us, which he emphasizes is a very important distinction, because clearly most of the black people on the planet do not wake up with a frame of mind that I am at war with anybody, certainly not racist man, racist woman, racist child. So I do make sure to try to state that correctly every time white people are at war with us. Very important to keep that in mind every day. And the additional information about the situation in France as well. Very, very important. I'm still adding folks to the conversation. Frank Fanon, I think, should be with us now as well. Are you with us, Frank?
Hi. Yeah, good evening, everyone. Yeah, I am here. I'm out at the moment. I'm at another sort of black event here in Croydon, and I just got caught out. I thought I'd be back on one time, but I'll just listen in, and if I need to say anything, I'll make sure I'm in a quiet place before I speak. But for now, I'll just listen in. Okay.
Outstanding. If you can mute your line, that'll be great. And then just unmute yourself when you're ready to rock and roll. Outstanding. Great to hear from you. Okay. I am. With the French situation, also, I thought it was important. They talked about how there are a lack of, I guess, non-white people in France to be able to talk about this situation. Like here in the U.S., it seems like there are a lot of different people. Right, who will be talk like you black people that you'll know that will be talking about, and then different radio outlets and what have you, where black people can be talking about an event. If you have something like Abner Louima, folks remember in the 90s, black male who was annually raped by an enforcement official in New York. When these type of things happen, you have, you know, outlets and people that can talk about it. And they were saying in France, they don't really have that, which I thought was pretty pretty interesting. Did folks have any thoughts on that?
I'm not really surprised. I mean, look at France's history. Look at what they're still doing to black people to this day. I'm not surprised. And if there is anyone that does speak out about it, I'm assuming that they're in the underground and they don't really get to be heard, because I saw an activist on Channel 4 News speaking about what's going on over there, and it would just seem that they happen to catch him on the fly, and there isn't really anything set up so that people can talk about it.
Yeah, it's I suspect there could be a correlation. France is, I think, known around the world for égalité, that everybody's equal and they're republic and all this, and so they don't keep statistics on racial information and try to play all that down. I suspect that could be contributing to the confusion. If that's true, could be a lie as well, but if that's true, I suspect that could be contributing to the confusion.
But we're supposed to feel bad about Charlie Hebdo. There was no lack of holding back where that was concerned, but anything else, you know, you can just twist in the wind. Mm-hmm. It's clearly just a bunch of nonsense.
Absolutely. I am just trying, still having other folks that are trying to make sure they get on the line here. African 1884, are you still with us, sir? Just making sure we still have you also.
Yes, I am.
Okay, outstanding. Woof. Any other comments on the situation in France? That, as I said, they had, or the clip that you heard, they've been having protests for days now. The incident happened at the beginning of the month. They've been having protests. From what I've seen, it does look like same thing in the U.S. and Canada, other areas, that there are a sizable number of people who could be classified as white who've been, you know, out chanting and all that, justice for Theo and all the normal stuff that you see in these type of cases. But I've seen a lot of that. I suspect, my theory, and I think it was even in the Washington Post report, that if it continues, and they said this explicitly in the report, I think it was a black person that they talked to, he said that if there is more police activity, if there's more like police protest against the police and they're burning cars and things like that, mm-hmm. that Marine Le Pen is going to win, or it's going to be somebody like her. It'll be the same effect in the U.S. like with Donald Trump, that if that continues, it's just going to push more and more white people in France to say, yeah, we need somebody to get tough on the Negros. Anything else?
Sure.
Oh, Nancy, are you with us?
Yes, I was dropped, but things seems to work fine now. Nice. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, of course. I think that's the strategy. Definitely. I will not be surprised to see somebody like Marine Le Pen to be the next French president. Yeah.
Do you think this could have been engineered?
Yes.
Wait, can you give us more detail? What do you mean?
I mean, as in certain white supremacists engineering this type of incidents to happen. Because the person that actually done this on, he was like a youth worker as well, from what I understand.
Yeah, like somebody who hasn't any problem. And from what I heard, he was just trying to help somebody who had some difficulty with the police stop and frisk thing. And he tried to just do something and, you know, and somebody like very helpful and courteous. And I mean, they drag him 4-1 and to do accidentally the rape. I mean, I feel like it was so staged, and for the French president to come to see him at the hospital, I really feel like everything was just staged, not staged for him, but like they planned that. And they knew that, you know, that will people will go down in the street and protest because they don't intend to do anything to say, like, it was an accident.
Yeah, but usually the case is that, I mean, from my understanding, when you have this situation where we as non-white people feel or understand the situation as being staged, the question is, what do you think they're doing while they're staging that? What are they doing on the other side? You know, are they implementing a new law? Are they just trying to confuse more non-white people? You know, what's the ultimate goal other than racism and white supremacy?
I think it's to normalize that kind of behavior so that there's absolutely no sympathy and no justice towards black people, because when you normalize violence against us and it becomes an everyday occurrence, everyone becomes numb to it, even black people become numb to it, and it becomes a normal modus operandi so that they can do whatever they want to you and no one's going to cry out about it. So I think that they're normalizing our death so that they can wipe us out.
Isn't that already the case?
Like, that's what I was thinking. There've been deaths and mutilations have been normal for the past 500 years or even longer. So, but in the aspects of it being normalized for the next generation, I could understand that.
I was reminded we're doing Delectable Negro. I think these specific types of acts, meaning the sexual abuse and specifically like state sanctioned enforcement officer sexual abuse of black people and non-white people on the whole, I think that's, you know, just a staple aspect of white supremacy culture. I think the book we're reading right now, The Delectable Negro, makes that plain. And you can pick, you know, any number of incidents all around the world that I think evidence mm-hmm. that very clearly. I think if at least when I think of staged, I guess my view would be number one, I think these sort of incidents happen all the time. So I don't think it's anything unusual about that per se. I'm reminded of Dr. Curry when he talked about the incident with Deion Payne, the 16-year-old black teen who was raped by a group of white men. He was raped and killed by a group of white men. Now, this happened in 2014. This is very recent. And he said, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of, there were no protests and riots and, you know, all that. He said it didn't really get a whole lot of attention. I know, and I'd never heard of it until he mentioned this. Like I said, this is recent, 2014. But I think this sort of thing happens all the time in the system of white supremacy worldwide. That's one, to males, females, children, everybody. Two, I think in terms of quote unquote staged, I think it could be, I think racists, they choose what to play up. I suspect this sort of thing happens all the time. Just what I just said, they didn't play up Deion Payne. They didn't have everybody in the world talking about that and protesting and hashtag and everything else. This got a lot of attention. They, like I just said, they had it in the Washington Post. They've had it. Vice did a big 5-minute piece on it. At minimum, I could think racists say, hey, we'll focus a lot of attention on this and get people riled up. And ultimately, I think as African 1884 said, this will serve our agenda even by us promoting it, because ultimately white people will just see, oh, look at the niggers out in the street tearing up and, oh, I'm so sick of this. And yeah, I'm going to vote Marine Le Pen. You're right. You're right. I'm tired of all this African hooliganism. And that makes a lot of sense when I think of stage. Like, how are we going to orchestrate this to benefit?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, definitely. Because you know what? In Belgium, a racist incident happened also, probably around the same time, 2nd of February. And basically, it was a teenager who wanted to get in the bus. He paid his ticket, everything was fine, but the driver, the bus driver, took his knife and assaulted him, you know, really bad. The teenager is, you know, not doing better, but I mean, he's not die, you know, he didn't die. But that incident is not reported once in the newspaper here in Belgium. You know, it's like nobody really talks about it. But everybody's focused on what is happening in France. So you see, it's like they try to use the what's happening to that victim, Theo, to go further with their agenda. But the same thing happened. Well, not the same, but I mean, an assault. Happened here in Belgium, and nobody in TV or in journal mentioned about it.
Sorry, folks, I got disconnected when I was adding. We have more people participating, so I think just adding some of the other folks, I got my line to the broadcast got disconnected, but I'm dialing back everyone now. This will be a hoot to see if we can get everybody back seamlessly. With no interference, no interruption. Hopefully, whites will upgrade their technology so it will work better without all of the disruptions. Okay, that's almost everybody. Am I missing anybody? I can try. And Andrew has been trying patiently to join us for the broadcast today. I've been trying to add him as well. Okay, I think that will be everybody. Let's see. I'm going to give it a try, see if we can get everybody back in one swoop here.
Hello?
Yeah. Let's see. Yes. Sorry about that. Adding everyone back now. All right, so we have Frank Fanon, I believe. I think Mr. Fox should be with us, and the other folks. I think Mary is with us as well. Some of the other folks, I guess it will. I'll see when they pick up or what have you. With the French situation, I think it was Nancy. Are you with us, Nancy? Oh, Nancy is not with us. Try again to get her back on the line, because I think she was responding with the French situation. I think that's where we got disconnected. We were kind of wrapping up the French situation. I'd kind of shared my thoughts. Nancy was going to respond. I'm trying to add her back now. Did anybody have final thoughts on the France situation? I reckon folks are satisfied. Well, I know Nancy had commentary. Oh, I think we got her back. Are you back with us, Nancy?
Yes, I'm back.
Outstanding. And I think we even got June with us as well. Are you with us, June?
Yes, I'm finally, and apologies for my technical issues tonight. So, yeah, it's good to be in. Thanks.
Outstanding. So good to hear from you as well. Also joining us in England, June, is we lost connection when, Nancy, you were giving your final thoughts on the French situation.
Yes, so I just wanted to mention that an assault happened here in Belgium as well. So a young teenager wanted to take the bus, and the driver had knife, and he touches him, and now the young boy is better. He's not dead, but still, it's like very, very serious. But I just want to say that in the newspaper, in the media, Belgium media didn't mention it. It only focused on what's happening in France with the Theo assault. So this is why I'm saying, like, this case in France is getting a lot of attention, and they just want to focus on that. So it's very suspicious for me. But in the meantime, what's happening in here in Belgium, they don't talk about it.
Absolutely. That the case, Nancy informed me about this incident that happened in Belgium, and I looked online, and there were not the same thing that I was saying before. This case also didn't get a whole lot of attention. I did find some reports, and I linked one of them in the description at Black Talk Radio Network. I'm going to put it on, or I already put it on Facebook, but you can check it out there. But there were tons of reports and lots of information. The little bit that I did find, I guess this bus driver that pulled a knife on this black male, the police didn't even take him into custody. They said, you know, they didn't even think it warranted taking him in for questioning or anything, which, I mean, just, again, this is what you can expect as a black person. And in fact, if folks want to compare that to Rosa Parks, Mr. Fuller said that bus drivers, that used to be what it was like to get on the bus in the States anywhere as a black person. He said that they used to have, he remembers the bus driver used to have a gun on his hip, and you would see it when you were getting on the bus. And if you gave him any lip or talk trash or anything else, you could be dead right there on the spot, and it would just be same thing. He wouldn't go to jail or anything. He said that used to be everyday experience under racism. Put that in context for Rosa Parks. Any other comments before we push forward other subjects? Since we just got June with us, we were talking about the rape situation in France. But before that, I asked if folks had other observations or things that they thought were important that have happened since we last heard from you. Any comments that you wanted to share, June?
No, it's good to be here. The only thing that I wanted to share about this rape thing is, you know, the way that the victims are always treated in this situation after the event. And I just found it astounding as well that even after the victim was in hospital trying to recover from this thing, that they had, you know, the news people in there by his bedside, they've got him in there asking people for, you know, telling the community to calm down. And this is just so typical. It's so typical of, you know, white supremacist abuse. They don't respect that this guy has been violated and that he's in a situation where he's trying to heal from what happened to him. And they've just got no respect for the fact that this has happened to him. You know, their priority is to drag him out in front of the media and tell everybody who's writing to calm down, because it's about them. It's not about the victim. And this happens all the time, you know, and it's just another way of trying to silence what's happening to us, that we don't, you know, it's like invalidating what happens to us. It's just all about them. It's just an observation that I noticed about this case, the pattern that just keeps happening all the time. And I think because, you know, so many of us are kind of worn down by this behaviour, by this cycle, that, that black, a lot of black people just seem to give in, and kind of, you know, with him asking for calm and all of this kind of stuff. And it's, yeah, we, you know, black people have got a right to be angry. We've got a right to be angry about this stuff. But it's just the silencing, it's just another way of kind of telling the world or telling other people that this, you know, we've violated you, but you have to tell everybody else to be quiet. Be quiet, we're going to drag you out in front of the media to keep quiet and forgive or whatever. Or I'm just waiting for the forgiveness conversation to happen. And then they tell everybody else to be quiet as well. It's just another way of just silencing the community. And I found that quite distressing, actually, you know, in addition to what actually happened to the gentleman. But to hear how he was, you know, treated afterwards, directly after the incident, I just thought was absolute disgrace, you know. So, yeah, I just kind of wanted to you know, make that point as an additional part of the abuse that happened to him.
Sorry, Goss, did you read out there's a 2.5-inch tear he has?
I did read that from the Washington Post report that he has a 2.5-inch tear in his anus. Yes, I did.
And that somehow is an accident that his trousers have been taken off, his underwear has been taken off, but then somehow a police baton finds its way near his anal area and also kicked. But somehow that is an accident. That's very amazing.
I know Frank Fanon, he was saying he was having problems hearing. I see that the audio meter, our sound is being picked up on the broadcast line. And I guess obviously since you are commenting on what people have said, you all are hearing each other. Is anybody else, everybody else, you're hearing everything okay? You're hearing everything?
Yes, I hear fine. Perfect.
We're fine. We're good.
That's what I thought.
Okay.
Right on. Yeah, if Frank Fanon, yeah, there you go. You can disconnect and dial us back in. There we go again. Hopefully we won't have any disruptions when we add you back to the line. Folks have, and if you have other subjects, other things that you think are important that are happening in the world, if you have observations, thoughts that you want to share, counter-racist suggestions, definitely get them in. This program is only 90 minutes, and listeners, feel free to call in if you have a question for any of our folks joining us. I think we have Austria, Belgium, England, respectively, on the line.
25 pounds.
I'm sorry? Oh, okay. Talking to somebody else, I thought, thought I missed a part of the world. For listeners in the States, if you have a question, take advantage, dial in, and if you have thoughts, questions you would like to ask. I think this is the first time that we've done a global Sunday talk on racism since President Trump has taken office. Any international observations the first 30 days of the new administration?
Bill Gates was here in Belgium, Brussels, 2 days ago. And he came here to talk about his, you know, foundation, this, and to meet with a major pharmaceutical group here in Belgium. And it was about, of course, finding new ways to do vaccines at a cheaper cost. So I will say, it's, from what I perceive on the Trump administration, it's like very efficient in terms of exterminating black people.
I think it's pretty much going as expected, to be honest with you. And it's been quite spectacular watching the fallout from people who voted for him who are now finding themselves being deported. It's like I've heard, you know, hold your own, in inverted commas, nuts, because everyone wants to be anti-black, everyone wants to have a problem with black people until they find themselves in the firing line and then they want to join and aggregate. They want us to be their donkeys, their mules, and to add to their numbers and walk with them and share their pain, and they're never there for us. Well, it's a time of reckoning for everybody, so everyone else can feel some pain. And to me, it's going, as he said, it's going smoothly. It's going just as bad as I thought it would, and this is just the beginning.
I would have to fully agree with that. And I am a subscriber of that hashtag or that term, hold your own nuts, because these the group of people who are now and have voted for Donald Trump, and they're finding themselves either the victims now of being deported. A lot of these people have a lot of anti-black sentiment in the US and in the countries which they reside from themselves. So it looks like Donald Trump, he's not gone for the obvious, which people might have thought, like go straight in on the black people straight away. He's gone for other non-white people. So in this situation now, I think black people in the US have to, if anything you need to try and get done or try to build upon it, I think now's the time to try and do it whilst shots are being fired at other non-white people. But for now, it has to be hold your own nuts. I do like that term, but you have a lot of these people who, as I've said, are very anti-black and very, you know, why don't the black people pull themselves up by their bootstraps? And now, all of a sudden, now they're finding themselves not being able to either come back into the US or being told to leave the US. So that's all I have to say on that.
Wow.
Can I just say there were never any boots?
Correct.
That's Mary with the quip, and Mr. Fox speaking previously about his favorite hashtag. Other folks have commentary, first 30 days of the Trump administration?
Yeah, it's true. And I actually felt the same as what everyone else has said as well, especially about the, you know, the Women's March. You know, obviously Trump's had his own, like, major issues around, you know, being abusive towards women and, you know, the whole abortion thing and stuff that he's been talking about. And, you know, white women have been up in arms about a lot of that. And, you know, I had white women ask me if I was going to go to the Women's March in London and stuff. And I was like, no. I'm not going, because, you know, when black women are getting killed and murdered, and I didn't see any feminists jumping up and down when those white police officers were sitting, you know, 14-year-old black girl at the swimming pool. I didn't see any outrage when Sandra Bland got murdered, you know. So I said, I'm not going, because, you know, a lot of these so-called feminist issues are for white women. They don't support black women. So, I chose to not go or get involved in any of those issues for that reason, because it's never about us. We, like the previous lady was saying, I'm sorry, I've forgotten her name. You know, we end up being the mule for everybody else. Now that everybody else is being treated with disdain, you know, all of a sudden, oh, yeah, come and, you know, we understand. And they want us to kind of join their cause. And then as soon as they get what they want, they disappear. So... yeah, I'm staying firm on what I, you know, what I'm fighting for at the minute, and it has to be for our people, because nobody else stands up for us. No one stands up for us. Everybody's quiet when it's us. So yeah, I actually found that quite. I did find it quite amusing when people were trying to ask me if I'm going to the march. I was like, no. So yeah, I think as everyone else has said, it is going exactly is it's planned, and it's interesting that I've seen a lot of stuff in social media about people getting upset now, saying, I wish I never voted for you and stuff. But yeah, it's the backlash has happened. And I am finding it quite interesting kind of watching people's reactions. And yeah, I'll be surprised if he lasts the 4 years, to be honest. But we just wait with interest and see how it goes. The other thing that I wanted to say as well about the travel ban situation is it just reminded me of the interview that you did with Dr. Welsing when she was talking about, you know, the refugees and stuff getting killed and, you know, getting, what was it, drowned in the boat and stuff like that. And she said, it's, you know, it was all to do with, you know, with the same code about white genetic annihilation. When they talk about all of these things and not wanting people to come into their country and all this kind of stuff, that's it's just code for that. And that's kind of what, you know, that's kind of what came up for me when I hear him talking about the travel ban, you know, the white supremacists, you know, they love the fact that he's in office because he's kind of serving their interest in that regard. And it's just, he's just playing out exactly as I thought he would actually. It's just interesting, just sort of joining the dots from so much of what Dr. Welsing said about him. So, yeah, it's just interesting seeing it all play out. That's what I have to say on the subject.
Talk about staged. Am I to understand that there was some sort of, was there a women's march or was it just a march against Trump in England?
Yeah. They had one in London. It's just like, I was just like, I am not going on this. Why are you even asking me to go?
Was it white women though? Or just people in
general? Yeah. I mean,
it was a mix because I was invited
You were invited as well? Okay.
I was invited by an Indian woman and I just, if I could have given her a dirty look because I was invited virtually, I would have done that. I just ignored it and kept on carrying on with my life. I just thought, Women's March? Yeah, out of your mind.
Wow. I know they had the solidarity marches. I didn't know it was like a women's solidarity march thing. I thought it was just like people were going out and like, yeah, when they had the women's march in D.C. and people were going out like, yeah, we hate Trump too. And, you know, because they were protesting that whole weekend. It was the inauguration weekend. That's interesting. I'm glad to hear you all rebuffed.
Can I come in on that? Yeah.
This is Frank Fanon.
This is Frank Fanon. Yeah, on the news here and on BBC and Sky News, I noticed the trend whereby the journalists that were covering the event, they were trying to sort of ask the people who were at the march, so is this a women's march? And the people, both the people who were organizing it and the participants, they kept trying to stress that no, it wasn't, and that it was for everybody. That it was for everybody who basically doesn't like Trump, but the media was. I got an impression that the journalists and the media were trying to frame it as a women's march. I don't know why. And the other side was trying to say, no, it's not just about women. It's about democracy and human rights and all these other fluffy, nice words that white people like to talk about. But yeah, that's just something I noticed about that episode.
Sorry, can I just say something regarding words and when certain words are used? Like when they say stuff like, well, when they say the term or the word women, does it, to the other people on the line, does it automatically default to white women to you? Because every time I hear women, I just think white women. Like when I hear sexism, I just think of white women being mistreated and having a problem. Does anyone else think the same?
Yeah, and it equates to feminism.
I think that's
sorry about that, folks. We got disconnected again. I saw we had folks who dialed in who had questions as well. It's having so many people, and then when I'm happy, because we still had people who we missed out when I've been trying to add people back on the line. It seems like that is causing me to get disconnected from the program line, trying to add people back. So hopefully as we move forward, we'll try to get it so we don't have to do all that during the program, because that certainly makes Gus T have to work much harder adding and people getting dropped and all that stuff. And then getting dropped from the program line just makes it more difficult to operate and manage things. But hanging in. Thanks for folks being patient. Let's see.
hopefully this will be the last time I will not do any more adding for the final half hour or so of the program, so that we can just ride out folks or our hisses. We have the folks that we'll have for the last bit of the broadcast. Okay, so we almost got everybody. Even trying to remember everybody that I have to add back in is making Gusty have to put in some mental energy on a early Sunday. Let's see. I think I got everyone. Yep, I think I got everyone. Okay. We will add everyone on the line here. Thanks, everyone, for their patience. Thomas in New York will get your question in promptly. And if any of the other folks that are calling in, if you have a question, 641-715-3640.
Yeah, well, I think we're all having a conversation. you've been kicked, so I've dropped out and everyone else is going to come in. But I think racist interference, like I was saying in the other room, is at its peak tonight.
Absolutely. I was telling the listeners, I keep getting bumped off when I redial people.
Hello?
Okay, so we should have a good number of folks back with us now. I think the point when it dropped, where it got really juicy, I think you all were having your private conversation about when they reference women's issues or the Women's March, are they talking about white women? And I think that was where there was going to be a group response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As I was saying in the other room, but when they say stuff, i.e. racism, when white people hear this, they automatically think, well, you know, I'm not a racist. What are they going on about now, these non-white people? But if you throw in sexism straight after it, then majority of like white people, meaning women and other women, will actually think, okay, then, well, you know, we'll listen to what this gripe's about. And if you throw in anything about anti-sexuals, homophobia, then whatever thing, anything you're going to say, which started off with racism is then going to hold weight. But anytime they say to me, is always white women. Sexism, white women.
And also feminism. That's what it all boils down to.
This is just, Mary.
Sorry, just feminism is all the way there. And then that's when they come out and be doing some ridiculous nonsense like inviting you to their marches. No, thank you.
I mean, could I say something?
This is African 1884, Austria.
Yes. The whole Women's March in regard to Donald Trump did not, I think they held one in the UK, but in Austria, Vienna, there was nothing that was organized and everything. But from my perspective, just like one of our participants say that when they say women, for the most part, it just for me automatically just means white women, you know. So here in Austria, when I heard about the Women's March in the US, I automatically knew there's going to be white women going out in the streets fighting or demonstrating and trying to get their position as white women who are ready to promote racism and white supremacy and support racism and white supremacy. You know, it has nothing to do with black women.
Can I add to that as well?
This is Frank Fanon.
Yeah. So in the wake of that global march, I saw a string of tweets from a Native American woman who said she was in, I think it was Washington, D.C., if I remember correctly. And she was saying that they came and they were basically marching as part of the Women's March. And they had placards and they were talking about the Dakota Access Pipeline issue, and they were basically being silenced by the white women that they had in their vicinity at the time, and a few of the white women even were, she says that they were saying that, well, they believe that they had some Indian in them, and so that qualified for them to say the things they were saying to the native Indian women. And yeah, it was just quite eye opening to see her own account of the of her experience as part of a Native Indian group of women who were marching as part of that. And it just kind of goes to show that it goes to kind of strengthen what everyone's been saying so far, that when they say women, they mean white women, and no other kinds of women are invited. You know, it's like what Sylvia Winter says, no humans involved. When they say human, they don't mean us, they mean them. So, yeah, that's it.
I think that's in Norm Stamper's book, No Humans Involved. This would be like a police code, so they know, oh, we don't need to hurry, or, you know, nothing important.
The woman I referenced, Sylvia Winter, she's a Jamaican academic in the U.S. I think she's retired now, but she wrote an article titled NIH, No Humans Involved. Sorry, NHI, No Humans Involved. I think she did, but I remember reading it a while back, and she was talking about the police, the secret code the police had for us victims of white supremacy whenever they were dealing with us. So, yeah.
Anybody have anything else they wanted to get in on the women's march issue or Donald Trump's first few weeks in office before I get a caller?
See, this is the strange thing. When you actually think about it, you've got non-white women who have looked at white women as sisters, but really they're actually marching with the facilitators and the second half of racism, white supremacy. When you actually think about it, it's crazy.
Yep, white women are often not seen as racist, unfortunately, or at least their role in the system of white supremacy is often greatly minimized to our detriment. And they have been very, very good all the way around at duping us into, you know, not thinking of them as racist or thinking that they're some good whites. I said that's going to be the new thing for the next at least 4 years. It'll be I hate Trump will be, I have a black friend, or my best friend is black. That'll be I hate Trump for the next 4 years, probably worldwide. Thomas in New York, did you have a question for any of our international participants? We have Mr. Fox, who you just heard from, June. She's also in England. Nancy with us from Belgium, African 1884 in Austria. Let's see, Mary also with us in England. Did I miss anybody? I think I got. Oh, we have Frank Benon, also in England. Thomas in New York, did you have a question, comment you wanted to get in, sir?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, my question for the international call is in your particular countries, how prevalent is the drug cocaine in those countries? Is there a lot of cocaine use amongst black people or white people inside of those particular countries you're in? I heard Austria, I think Denmark, and England.
Can I be heard?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
For what I can recall, when I was in school, cocaine was mostly used by white people. Rich white people. It was common for them when it was Friday night to go to certain area where obviously non-white were not allowed, like very fancy, bougie kind of, cafe, bistro. And I do recall that they were talking a lot about cocaine. And they can afford it, yeah. So, this is my perception. White people do have access to cocaine.
Could I say something? Can I be heard?
This is African 1884 in Austria.
Yes. In regard to the brother's question, in Austria, I mean, Vienna, to be honest, I don't have much information in regard to the use of cocaine, but what is prevalent right now is the use of marijuana, especially among black people. And for the most part, there have been cases of black people who have maybe kind of like gone crazy or lost their minds due to the abuse of marijuana. And that's one of the reasons that I was also a user of marijuana, but I stopped that because when white folks started promoting it, because I was thinking to myself, why didn't you promote it back in the day when Bob Marley was trying to say that, okay, it's something that black people could use, you know, but right now, 2017, white folks are promoting it and everything. And if you see in Vienna, Austria, a lot of what you have here is not organic. A lot of the stuff is spiked with some other chemicals, and you have African people here on the streets that are destitute and have gone crazy due to the abuse of marijuana or the use of marijuana. You know, so in Austria, a lot of black people like being targeted, you know, because being promoted, you can have stands where they just sell marijuana, where you could just buy it for either recreational use or for medical use and everything. But for the most part, I've seen cases where black people, the effect on black people is a negative effect. So I don't promote the use of marijuana. In regard to cocaine, I don't have much information.
Hi, Mary speaking in London and across the UK, actually. Cocaine is quite popular with white people. And if they can't get access to cocaine, they'll use methamphetamine, speed, and other types of drugs, especially the ones that you can put on your tongue, underneath your tongue, and are easily absorbed. And they use this a lot to go clubbing. And I know this not just from news reports, but from my experience of practicing law and dealing with people who got caught with tons of it and had been arrested. So yeah, there's drug use here like that.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, sir. We can hear
yeah,
you.
This is Frank Fanon.
Right on.
Yeah. So, as a child of an African immigrant here in London, I remember my mom. When we first came to England, my mom and her friends, they basically being Africans, they had to work like cleaning jobs, and my mom worked in like some central London hotels, some posh hotels, where she said, like, occasionally she would find, in the toilets, £50 notes rolled in the kind of funnel fashion, and they used that to basically snort up cocaine, and after they got so high, they would basically just forget to pick up their £50, and she would basically pick it up. So based on that, I would basically guess that cocaine is a drug that is used mostly by well-to-do white people, at least in London anyway. But like other people have said, like the brother from Austria said, here in London as well, the amongst black people, weed is what people smoke. Weed is the drug of choice amongst black people here in London, at least here in Southeast London where I live. And even as well, just to add to that, I mean, almost on a daily basis, I'm walking down the street and I've got locks, and I get so many people asking me if I've got weed or if I've got weed to sell or to give to them. So just the assumption that maybe I've got some marijuana on me is maybe, for me, and I know it's anecdotal, but I think it's enough for me to kind of go by the thinking that among black people here in London, marijuana is more of a choice drug, and cocaine, based on my mom's experience and her friends as well, cocaine is more of a choice drug for wealthy white people.
So, yeah, that's all I have to say.
And we miss anybody who wanted to respond to Thomas in New York's question about the cocaine use specifically or drug use specifically?
I would actually, Mr. Fox here, I'd actually say I think it's the same all around the world when it comes to the types of drugs between the different groups of people. White people, their array of drugs which they use are always more extensive than black people. Black people do alcohol, cigarettes, and weed, where the white person, they will start off early on the alcohol, cigarettes, the weed, and then from the weed, it will be the speed, the ecstasy, and the cocaine. So they start off pretty early, because I remember in school, this was about kids like 15, 16, 14. Obviously, they're already smoking and drinking, but a lot of these kids, they call cocaine Charlie over here. I don't know if they call it Charlie still now, but I remember back in the day, they used to call it Charlie. But a lot of the kids in school, Monday morning, they're talking about what they've done over the weekend, and Charlie will be involved in it. So over here, a lot of white people will do everything. But the main drugs, it will be weed and it will be Charlie. And that will be all. That will be from the low ends to the middle classes upwards. Because as Frank says, his mum was finding £50 notes which have been rolled up. Now, £50 notes in England, not a lot of people have them. You can't afford to even lose one of them. So she found that in a hotel room. That was some high-flying business dude, you see. So, £50 notes. When you see that, that always catches your attention. That pink note,
yeah.
Well, she's finding that, and people are forgetting to pick it up. That's a lot of them city boys. A lot of the city boys do it.
Yeah.
Cocaine's the white people's drug. You get black people doing it to, you know, try and fit in, depends on what type of, social area they're in. But normally cocaine is for the white people.
Satisfied, Thomas, in New York?
Yes, I am. Thanks for answering the question. And I'll let you continue, Gus. I know it's only a few minutes left. I was going to offer my assessment of Trump's first month, but I could do that on another show.
Right on. I know he's enjoyed theater, as have I at parts. I haven't been able to watch as much of it as I would like, but I think he'll be there for a little bit longer, so I'll have an opportunity to catch up. It's Black History Month here in the States, which has provided a wealth of opportunities, I'm sure, for folks to get out and catch some things, do some learning. I know here in Seattle they have an exhibit on Jacob Lawrence that I'm going to go check out at the Seattle Art Museum. And I think one of our listeners yesterday, she mentioned, I think it was Roz, might be listening in right now, Dana Ramey Berry, her new book, The Price for Their Pound of Flesh. She's a black female professor. Her book, which also contains a great segment about how an important aspect of the brutalization of black people is the trafficking in black corpses, which is something that I guess that does not get talked about, like the rape of black males. But I am looking forward to reading that. Maybe we can even get her on the program, Dana Ramey Berry. Anybody reading anything significant since we have our international audience? You all might be reading some cool stuff we should know about.
Yeah, I'm reading a book titled Is God a White Racist? And that's what I'm reading right now.
I think you might have had that offer on the broadcast. That title sounds very familiar.
I think that's Dr. Jones, if I remember. Is it the author, Dr. Jones?
Yes.
Yeah. He was one of our first, this is our 8-year anniversary. He was, I think, one of the first 10 programs that we did where we had Dr. Jones on the program, the now late Dr. Jones. He passed away not that long ago. But, yeah, it's God a White Racist. very important book. I think we cut, even though he did not agree that there was a system of white supremacy, he was on the program, but he does have some very important concepts in the book, and even shared some really important concepts on the program, how it used to be pretty a widespread thing to be a black person and to like flagrantly condemn Christianity. He talked about that on the program.
Yes. I'm reading They Came Before Columbus.
Nice, nice, nice.
Yeah, I'm reading a book by Frank Wilderson. I know he's been on the show previously twice. I'm reading Red, White, and Black, Cinema and U.S. Antagonisms, I think it's titled. I'm nearly at the end of it, so, yeah.
Nice. I read that book as well. Matter of fact, the second time that Dr. Wilderson was on the program, that is the very book that we discussed that has some interesting, I guess, cinema watching as well, if you're into discussing, breaking down films and the racism therein. Anything else, folks, reading? Anything else?
Yeah, hi, June. I'm actually reading a book on how to, it's called How to Break Addiction to White Supremacy, which is quite interesting. I don't know if you've heard of him. It's a guy called Marvin X. And it's basically, he talks quite a lot about his own struggle with addiction and how, you know, white supremacy plays a part in, you know, in how addiction is created and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's an interesting book. It's good. It's a good read. And, yeah, it's good.
Nice. Wow. You said Marvin X is the author?
Yeah, Marvin X, and it's called How to Break the Addiction to White Supremacy.
Nice, nice, wow. Wow. I think I'm looking at it now. Any other books folks are reading right now? Always think it's good to share. Literature, constructive literature.
I'm currently just going through the audiobook archives. Because that's the only time I really get, really, is to listen to the books when I'm on the move. So right now it's the Tony Diaries. I'm on them part 5 at the moment.
That is so wild. We did that. That's like one of the first books that we did in the book club. And so that's 2012 that we did the Turner Diaries, right in the middle of the election cycle when Obama won the re-election. And this month, within the past 2 weeks, on PBS here in the States, they released two big documentaries on like white supremacist movement. So one of them was about Timothy McVeigh. He did the Oklahoma City bombing in 95, and it talked about how he was influenced by the Turner Diaries, and he sold the Turner Diaries, and some of these other people that they talked about in the group, they also read the Turner Diaries and were influenced by it and all that. And then they did a different documentary on Ruby Ridge, and the Turner Diaries came up there too. And other listeners have said that they just started listening to the cows, or they went back and found the Turner Diaries or heard it referenced, so they went back to listen to that book. Like, wow, that particularly for this time period, for all the things that are happening now. Yes, I would say it's very accurate. If we had not read that book before, I would say, yeah, that should probably be on the reading list to read now. But that is a great guide if you want to get an understanding of white people. Anything, I think you said you're on the fifth segment. Has anything, what's been like the main thing that stood out in what you've heard so far?
Good old Cappy the Kike. Oh God, that is the narrator. Oh, just everything about it is this. It doesn't take white people long just to realize it doesn't. They just put. They can add up really quickly if anything's gonna threaten white supremacy or their system. They just go at it. But how Kevin MacDonald is actually, it's Kevin MacDonald, isn't it?
It's William Pierce.
William Pierce, but I think he's gone by the name of Kevin MacDonald or something like that when he's actually published the book. because I think Kevin MacDonald is actually on the front of the book.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now on Wikipedia. It says Andrew MacDonald.
Is it Andrew MacDonald?
Andrew.
Yes, yes.
Why I got Kevin from, but yeah, it's fascinating. It is absolutely, it's fascinating. And I can actually understand where why a lot of white people, especially like Timothy McVeigh, can actually have this book as their Bible. But in their world, I just don't understand somehow how basically it's a system of kind of justice, but it's kind of I can't get my head around how there's a system where white people are now the victims and they've been sold into slavery, and the big thing is that Jewish people are now kind of in control, and the biggest allegation and slur you can have as a white person is being called a racist.
Very similar to times that we're in now, white victimization. Yes. You called me a racist, PC. I mean, very, very similar. And the guns, that's a big part of it, too. They're going to take our guns, the symbolic castration. That is a big plot mover in the Turner Diaries. And Negroes, of course. They're kind of they're more of a nuisance. It's the Jews have taken over, and they're responsible for messing everything up and making things bad for white people. But black people are more just a nuisance, raping nuisances, basically. It's not like they're in charge. And I think he has some graphic scenes where they get to kill quite a few black people as they move throughout the journal. Yeah. But yeah.
I've noticed that because black people in it are not kind of the main problem. It is basically the Jews and whites who are not seeing the uphold of the right race of being as a priority. So it's like the traitorous whites, the white women who like to sell themselves to or sleep with blacks, and this demongrelization of white people in America. It's very like how he writes it, it's like this can happen anytime. It's a strange one, but it's a fascinating read, and it's had me laughing out loud many a time.
Me too. That was one book to read. And the way that he reads it, and I don't know why, I don't know what's up with the pseudonym, the Andrew MacDonald, but yeah, William Pierce, the author, he reads, or at least the version that we did, is him narrating his own work. And that in and of itself is hilarious and probably worthy of study as well. I think there are a few points where he like voices black people, and it's remarkable all the way around. And then the reverence for this work that has, you know, just endured for, you know, over 20 years now, people worshiping this text, and this is so great, and this is our Bible, as you stated. It is absolutely amazing. Again, I said the same thing yesterday. You can learn a lot from the books that we've done on the book club, on the cows. You don't even have to listen to the archive. You can just get the book and read it yourself, which would be quicker. Might be worth a read. It's not that long. If you're a reader, you can get through it pretty quickly, I'm sure. It might be worth a read, The Turner Diaries, Andrew MacDonald, the pen name, real name, William Turner, Dr. William Turner. And did we miss anybody who had a book they wanted to contribute, book that they're reading, or book that they think folks should check out?
I'm still on Nellie Fuller codification book, so just wanted to mention that.
Awesome, awesome. Many folks are there, I think. I think retired firefighter said he's reading that as well right now. Mm-hmm. And you talked about all of the strain when you were with us last month that you had to go through to even get the book and then to have it be opened upon arrival.
Exactly. So really, this is my main reading for this month.
I know one. We got books. Anything else folks want to get in? We're close to our 90 minutes. Any other topics or observations, questions folks wanted to get in before we get ready to conclude things?
Very quickly, I'll be very quick. I just want to send my thoughts and prayers out to the river that had to bear the body of that KKK member that was murdered and thrown into it. My thoughts are with the river.
Our second quip from Mary for the day. other folks that had comments they wanted to get in, questions, observations before we get ready to wrap up?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, I don't know if anyone else noticed this news story, but Boris Johnson, the UK's foreign minister, he's in Africa at the moment. I think Gambia to be more precise. And there was this story that came out yesterday or even today, where his press team basically stopped the Gambian journalists from asking him questions about colonialism, and specifically British colonialism in that part of Africa, because he's got a previous history of writing in a kind of favorable way about colonialism and how it was beneficial to all parties involved, including the Africans. I just thought it was interesting that it was reported, but it's not really been, not much noise has been, as much noise as I would hope would be made about it, hasn't been made. So I just thought I would just mention it.
They did report that in The Voice. I think that's a paper that focuses on issues dealing with black people out of the UK.
That's a blackness paper,
They did mention it there. Boris Johnson causes a stir on Gambia trip, and that specifically. The Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, who was the mayor of London at the time of the London riots, as they called them in 2011, is facing criticism after allegedly refusing to answer questions on colonialism during an official visit to the Gambia. Johnson, who met with Gambia's new president, Adama Barrow, in a bid to boost relations, is known for his controversial remarks on colonialism in Africa, which he defined as that country during a 2016 conference. That's hilarious. people reacted with surprise and outrage after the foreign secretary's press team allegedly prevented Gambian journalists from asking questions about Britain's colonial history in Gambia, a former British colony. I'll post it so y'all can read the whole report. But yeah, this is the way y'all should check The Voice anyway. But the voiceonline.co.uk and the article Boris Johnson causes a stir on Gambia trip. And I think Boris Johnson has been like to the States. I've seen him on like late night shows and what have you. They were talking about him maybe running for prime minister at some point. Like I said, he was former mayor. He's a pretty well-known guy, certainly in England, but I would even say around the world. He's pretty well-known race soldier, suspected race soldier. Other folks, comments they wanted to get in before we, quick questions, comments, observations?
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, definitely. They should be banned from ever going to Africa again, or any of these white colonialists. And just a litmus test for how efficient the system works is he could go to their country and determine what questions he is or is not going to answer. And, you know, it just shows how the power of white people, the power of white supremacy.
Thomas in New York, great observation, great observation.
Yeah, can I just add something else as well in relation to the Gambia? This was even more underreported than the Boris Johnson news, and basically it is the fact that the former Gambian president, Yahya Jammeh, pulled the Gambia out of the Commonwealth, which is this organization of former British colonies, and England as well, obviously, and he pulled the Gambia out, and the new president said he will be fighting to get the Gambia reinstated into the Commonwealth. I just think it's interesting that he's taking this line, because the former president, his opinion was that the Commonwealth is basically an organization that
that keeps Africans in servitude, and we don't really need that. And this new president saying that he's going to pull Gambia back into the Commonwealth, it's quite disturbing. And also to see that a few months after he's been made president, Boris Johnson is visiting, he's making a state visit basically to the country, it gives me cause for concern, really. But yeah.
Britain is who funded and backed the new president, and now that he's in there, they're going to come back and get their rewards for backing him and get him in that position.
Yeah.
We are. These are supposed to be our final comments, not back to respond to what other people have shared. We miss anybody? Have a final question, comment they wanted to get in? Everybody commented. We didn't miss anybody who had something they wanted to share.
Is this just generally or just all stuff that we've already shared? So I'm kind of a bit confused.
Just in general, before we wrap up, does not have to be related to anything. Just anything on your mind that you would like to share with the listeners before we conclude.
Yeah, there's a couple of things actually that I just wanted to share with everyone, and just to say that, you know, it's great to be informed about what's going on in the world and, you know, and to kind of keep up to date on the news and stuff like that. But also to remind everyone that, you know, it's important not to minimize the impact, the emotional impact that it has on us. So, you know, whenever I do any of these sorts of or any day, you know, when I'm reading the news and stuff like that, it's important to be really compassionate to yourself and take care of yourself and to, you know, find ways of kind of discharging any energy, any anger, any emotional feelings that come up, because that quite often happens when we talk about this stuff, because sometimes we can talk about it, dissect it, think about it, and then we kind of, you know, we get left with the feelings. You know, we understand what's happened intellectually, but then we don't really do anything with the feelings that might come up around it. And I know that's sometimes quite hard for us to acknowledge, but I think in order for us, you know, they do say that one of the most revolutionary things that we can do for ourselves as a people is to take care of ourselves. Self-care is a revolutionary act. So just a kind of, you know, gentle, loving reminder to everyone that, you know, stay informed with what's going on, but also remember to be compassionate to yourself after these things. Find ways of discharging the energy, the negative energy, and just to stay safe. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Could I add something?
Oh, for sure. This is African 1884 in Austria.
Yes. Just a general comment, and I just wanted to share something with everyone. I would say that based on my experience here with a lot of Black people here, I would like to say that it's important that we minimize our contact. I know Mr. Fuller says minimize contact with non-white people if it's not for constructive reasons, but also our contact with white people if it's not for constructive reasons. Because for the most part, I've realized that for many of the Africans that I've met here, Black people in general, the more they spend time around white people, they tend to compromise how they speak and act towards racism, white supremacy, or they tend to divert from the code. You know, because they tend to become emotional in how they engage with white people. So it kind of like the more we spend more time with white folks, it impacts our frequency and in our level of consciousness and how to deal with them in countering racism and supremacy. So minimize contact with white people if it's not for constructive reasons. You can engage with them at the job and everything. Other than that, I would recommend every Black person to minimize that contact, because it does have an impact on how we understand race and white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Emotional distance.
Yeah. Correct. Thank you.
Amen. I was looking at some of the articles at The Voice just as I was sharing the Boris Johnson report, and the number one article from The Voice, why are black people twice more likely to go missing? Part two, worldwide trend. Even I was talking to a listener offline about this, where this sparked even further interest. But this is the number one story. I'll share this one as well. The value of black life. And in their third article, how the care system is letting down black children. And this is a UK publication focused on black people. I'll post both of those. Did we get everybody? Folks satisfied? Grand, yeah. Grand. Wonderful hearing from everyone. We missed Andrew. He and I tried diligently to get him on the program throughout, but we failed. Hopefully we'll hear from him next month. March, it will be March 19th, the Global Sunday Talk for next month, March 19th. We'll do it again, and we might even have our Marquise. He's in Brazil, so we'll have even more people to add to the discussion. To kind of help us get a global perspective on this problem. We'll see some of the similarities, differences, and how the system operates. I think especially for Brazil, given what he shared with us at the beginning of the week, those observations would be good to include South America in our dialogue on white supremacy. Thanks to everyone who participated. June, Frank Fanon, we posted juneallen.net. You can go check out her blog, podcast, the whole nine. Nancy in Belgium, visit her podcast as well. We discussed it last month on the program, where she deals with workplace racism and just her self-journey in understanding racism, white supremacy. Mr. Fox, outstanding effort in posting lots of the Cows material on YouTube. We'll post his YouTube channels. African 1884, thank you kindly for visiting with us again from Austria. Let's see, miss anybody? Mary, been with us for a while. Thank you kindly for joining in, and great ad libs. Always great to get a little humor in with our dialogue on racism, white supremacy. Frank Fanon as well, good to hear from you. I think that was everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For sure. Thank good to hear. For sure. Thank you all. Stay safe. If we can add more folks, if we can add more folks to the dialogue, if you find anyone and they want to participate, friends, other folks in your part of the world, let us know. They're certainly welcome. We'll do it again March 19th, and it's the third Sunday of every month, same time. We'll be back later in the week. We'll have a matter of fact, Mr. Fox, if you remember, it was a white woman who did an article on racism. She was a reverend. It was a white reverend, white female reverend. She wrote some articles. She was talking about racism, and she was talking about white people specifically practicing racism. I emailed her. She'll be on the program this coming Wednesday. I'll post the article so folks can do their research in advance to prepare for her. But always, I think it's great when you can ask white folks questions, particularly this white reverend who talks relatively honestly about racism. But that'll be Wednesday, normal program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific.
Sorry, did I send you that article?
I believe you did. I can send it back. It was a while ago. I think it was more than a month ago. It took some time.
Yeah, please. I think I kind of slightly remember. Well, please send it my way, please.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, that'll be this coming Wednesday. And if other folks, if you have guest suggestions or problems, you can't find something in the archives, Turner Diaries, or whatever you're looking for, drop us an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. With that, as I particularly given what we've heard about drug use today, sobriety would be best under conditions of war. I think Dr. Welsing even talked about the cannabis thing, but just in general, I've seen no evidence that alcohol, tobacco, any of the other narcotics, even in Georgia, I think they have a new gray death is this new concoction, new poison that whites have cooked up. It was online on one of the local Georgia news sites the other day where they were talking about cases of this, and they think people have died from this. At the end of the day, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Dr. Welsing would want us to have our brain computers operating at full capacity so that we can crank out concepts, ideas, solutions to the problem, racist man, racist woman, racist child. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.